We'd like to thank our friends at PwC for their support, partnership, and collaboration in making Retail Gets Real. Learn more about how PwC helps retailers at pwc.com.
The whole idea of shopping in a way that was conscious from an environmental standpoint was just starting to happen. Millennials and Gen Zs were really driving that change. Mobile was driving that change, you know, having lots of choice. All of these pieces came together for me, and it felt like, you know, the right thing to do.
I'm Bill Thorne from the National Retail Federation, and this is Retail Gets Real, where we talk with retail's most fascinating leaders about the industry that impacts everyone, everywhere, every day. Today's guest is someone who wants you to think secondhand first when shopping. Anthony Marino is the president of ThredUp, which calls itself the world's largest online consignment and thrift shop. Join us as we talk to Anthony about the use and rise of resale and what all retailers should know about today's consumer. And I'm joined by my friend, my colleague, and my co-host, Chris Stewart. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Bill.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing really well. Why are you great?
I'm great because we are talking to Anthony, who is the president of ThredUp, which is one of my favorite online shopping destinations.
That's fantastic. Anthony, welcome to Retail Gets Real.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
Really glad that you're here. So tell us a little bit about Anthony Marino. How did you get to ThredUp?
Yeah, it's one of those stories that I hope you'll never forget. So I came home from work one night. This is back in 2013. And I walked into our New York City apartment. And there was a green polka dot ThredUp box on our kitchen table. And I walked into the kitchen and my wife was standing in the doorway. Her name's Courtney. And she looked in my direction. She said, "Open it up." So I unfolded the tissue paper, the green polka dot tissue paper. And I reached inside and I pulled out what was a very good looking cashmere sweater. And I said, looked at her and I said, "Okay." She said, "I bought that for $40. And I said, "Okay." She said, "It's a $400 sweater." And I said, "All right." And she said, "It's used." And I said, "What?" And as I looked, there were three more sweaters in the box. And she said, "This is a really amazing company." She said, "You send them the clothing you're no longer wearing, women's or kids' clothing, and they either give you credit to shop on their site, or you can take the money and put it in your pocket." She said, "And I sent in a bunch of the kids' stuff and got some credit and bought a bunch of cashmere sweaters." She said, "Now I'm going to send in a bunch of my stuff. I'm going to buy more." And I said, "Okay, that's great." And then she looked at me deadly serious, right in the eye. And she said, "You need to go work for this company." Wow. And I said, "Okay." I said, can we have dinner, you know, first?" And so 6 months later, we packed up our New York apartment. This is 2013. Took our kids out of school, two young kids, and we moved to California. And it's been quite an adventure.
That's pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
So when you started with ThredUp, what was kind of, you know, it was in 2013, it was kind of the infancy of secondhand. And so what did you see that made you think, "I need to be a part of this"?
Yeah, I think there were a few things that I saw. One was just my wife's enthusiasm. You know, she's a pretty sort of skeptical, analytical person. And she doesn't follow trends, you know, or doesn't chase trends, I should say. So that was the first thing. The second thing was that I also was out in New Jersey visiting my parents, and I saw a ThredUp cleanout bag on somebody's porch. So you can go to ThredUp.com and order what we call a cleanout bag, which is a bag we send you for free. It's about the size of a hamper, and you put women's or kids' clothing in it that you're no longer wearing, and then we pick it up and send you money for the clothing, or we let you get a tax receipt or whatever you choose. And I saw one of those green polka dot bags sitting on somebody's porch. And I sort of like was like, "Okay, this is the second set of green polka dots I've seen in 2 weeks. What's going on?"
Design.
And then, so it felt like the universe was telling me something. Right. Then I reached out to an old friend who I realized knew the founder of ThredUp. The founder of ThredUp, his name's James Reinhart, and he's co-founder and he's our CEO. And I reached out to him and he and I met. And we met out in California and we just really wanted to work together. I had spent 7 years working for Richard Branson at the Virgin Group and had really built my career there, really putting the Virgin playbook to work where we would identify, you know, industries that had been left for dead, you know, industries that were anything but sexy, airlines, banks, trains, telecom companies. And the Virgin playbook was to make them sexy, but to make them sexy with substance, to change the customer experience and to really transform how consumers would perceive that experience. And when I met James and when I saw what ThredUp was trying to do with Secondhand, it felt like it was a chapter out of the, you know, the Virgin playbook where we could take an industry that no one would ever argue was sexy and make it very appealing. And there were a bunch of trends that were moving in our direction. People always love great deals. People love brands. And by people, I mean, in our specific case, women, because 99.9% of our customers are women. The whole idea of shopping in a way that was conscious from an environmental standpoint was just starting to happen. Millennials and Gen Zs were really driving that change. Mobile was driving that change, you know, having lots of choice. All of these pieces came together for me and it felt like, you know, the right thing to do. And when I joined the company, you know, we were in a five-story walk-up on Market Street with a single bathroom and we had more cockroaches than employees, I used to like to say. And so it was a bit jarring at first to go from working for Richard Branson and going to Necker Island and having your one-on-one with Richard on the beach to being on Market Street in San Francisco selling used clothing. You know, I think my friends and family were like, man, Anthony really didn't, what happened to him? You know, he really fell down a few notches. So, but I was passionate about it. And I was passionate about the mission of the company, which was to inspire a new generation of shoppers to think secondhand first. And having spent 7 years building the Virgin brand, I was ready to build something new where I could be a part of a team that was there at the very beginning and that would learn all the hard lessons along the way to building a great brand, but would just have that incredible experience of entering into a business proposition that most people told us would fail.
Really?
Yeah. Everyone said it would fail, with the exception of a few very, very passionate investors who believed in James and the team and in the business. And so that leap was a leap that I was really excited to make, but it was an informed leap.
Can you talk a little bit about the business? I mean, you guys have, what'd you say, 35,000 brands, 100 categories, and how many new arrivals every second?
It's about 100,000 new arrivals per day.
Per day, right.
So you can divide that by 24 times 60.
Sure. Yeah. Sorry. Seconds.
You could do that. I'm yeah. Not yeah. To
so that's, I mean, that's just so much. How do you even, how do you make that happen? What's that look like?
People ask us often, what was the biggest challenge that surprised you? And I think it was the logistics and operations complexity that surprised us. I mean, we knew it was going to be hard yeah. to take these individual items out of a bag. And in the beginning, we were doing it, taking them out of the bags by hand, taking pictures with iPhones and putting them on the internet. I think what happens when you're getting into, you know, when you go from hundreds of items a day to thousands to 10,000 to 100,000 items, you encounter complexity in software, and by software, I mean not just the type that runs on computers, but the software, like the people kind of software.
Yeah.
The hardware challenges of physical facilities and automating physical facilities. So that has probably been the biggest challenge over the past 4 or 5 years, but it's one we've invested a tremendous amount of mm-hmm. time and effort in. And we believe now that we're on the other side of that complexity, now the business is really starting to scale and scale efficiently. But we had to get past that initial, that bridge from a manual operation where we were handcrafting the processes to one where we were then automating the processes in software to ones where we were then automating it in hardware and creating distribution facilities with conveyor technology and the ability to you know, take a facility with upwards of 2 million items on hangers in it, and then identify, have an order come in, identify the 3, 4, 5 things that are in that order in that mass of items, and then fulfill that order within 60 seconds. So there was a, there was quite a, an arc of learning there, but I think that's, you know, what was very difficult, and where we had some high highs and low lows, you know, in the early days of sorting that out, now is our greatest advantage.
Yeah. I was thinking about, you know, it's such a unique problem because a retailer will have 45 black coats, but it's all the same coat. And so you just need to have one picture of this black coat, but you may have the exact same brand, the exact same style, but it's not the same quality. And so you have to individually photograph each item, yes?
That's exactly right. Every single, we call them snowflakes, single item on the site is different. And we have upwards of, you know, in the next couple months, upwards of 4 million unique SKUs.
Yeah.
So we take hundreds of millions of photographs every year across 35,000 brands, 100 categories, and we build massive data sets on trillions of data points to arrive at pricing, to arrive at a clearance methodology that works at the item level, because a black dress that has a slightly different feature than another black dress that made to a computer, they look the same, they're very different to a customer, and so they need to be priced very differently. So understanding those nuances of fashion, which is a very personal interpretation, what you think looks amazing, another person says I wouldn't, you know. Yeah. So understanding how that all manifests itself into a price at scale is a fair amount of complexity, but it's the heart of the business.
Is it all automated? I mean, is there a person looking at every single item and determining the, you know, this is a good quality, this is excellent quality, this is show signs of wear?
There are people involved, and there are cameras and computers involved. Mm-hmm. I'll say that it's been hard to teach a computer what an appropriate level of pilling is.
Well, there's subtleties.
Yeah. So those are things I think in the next 5 to 10 years we'll figure out.
Mm-hmm.
But for now, I think we still need a human to look at it and be like, is this good enough that to call it like new? And would I give this to my best friend and say, wear this to your, name your important occasion?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Just listening to you, I have to be honest. I mean, it's like trying to put your head around the, how the universe goes on for infinity. What is infinity? I mean, that challenge, I just, it's really hard to think about how you can accommodate for all of those expectations, you know, what customers expect from the product that you send them, what they see online, how you present it online. So you're being honest about, you know, what this particular garment is, with the shape that it's in. That's huge. I'm really impressed. That's a big challenge. But the one thing, I think another great challenge that y'all would have would be convincing people that secondhand is good. I mean, you know, I don't necessarily want to wear what somebody else wore. Well, you know, what did they wear it for, and what did they do while they were in it, and you know, all these things that people conjure up in their brains.
Yes, and I'm sure we could talk about a few but they would not clear the propriety department at the NRF.
Yeah. So, but how? I mean, how are you going about helping to change that mindset?
Yeah,
and I would think that it's easier for some and harder for others.
Yeah, it's a great question. So when I came to, there really are a lot of myths, false myths about the secondhand clothing market.
Yeah.
One myth is that is that the people who buy this stuff are somebody else's customer.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a retailer, whether you're a luxury retailer like Gucci or whether you're Lululemon or Gap, every year we publish our annual resale report, which we list on our post on our website, and we do, you know, surveys of consumers and what they're buying, what they're not buying, and the brands they love. And we also survey retail executives and board members to see what's on their minds. And when we ask customers of all of those different retailers, whether they're shopping, whether they say their favorite store is TJ Maxx or Gucci or Gap or Walmart, you know, the number of people within those groups who say that they would buy more from that retailer if they also sold secondhand is massive. So the myth that secondhand is the secondhand shop or somebody else's customer is just wrong. The second thing I think people, is a myth is that, well, it's kind of a niche market. Is it a small market? It's a $24 billion market this year in the U.S., and that's growing about 20 times faster than apparel retail. So it'll be a $50 billion market in about 5 years. There are more thrift and consignment stores in the U.S. than there are department stores. And when you go home this weekend, wherever you live, look within a mile of your home, you're going to see a little store that has 50, 100, 200 things for sale. People bring in their stuff. So it's very much in the consciousness. It's just, it sort of depends who you are. I think that another thing that's changed is that when you look at the people who are shopping secondhand, it's across all age groups. So we have as many millennials as we have grandmas. And it is across all income groups. So we have as many people who are millionaires as we have people who are, you know, on a budget. So it's people love brands. They love deals. They love to have fun. You know, I mean, a big part of our product strategy is to make the experience fun. And then if you then look at, you know, if you look at millennials and you look at Gen Zers, one in three Gen Zers told us, and you can, again, this is all in our research that's, you can find it threadup.com/resale. They told us that one in three will buy secondhand. So it's bigger than you think, and it's kind of, it's right under your nose, but that's not to say that we haven't over the years faced challenges in convincing investors, especially investors who are male investors, who think about their clothing differently, who buy maybe once a year versus, you know, a female shopper who buys a lot and who thinks about herself and her style a little bit differently.
It is interesting. I have bought secondhand, but I have a farm, and so I think, why in the world would I buy anything nice for the farm? I mean, I'm gonna be in the yard. I'm gonna be in the garden. I'm gonna be doing, you know, other stuff. So, you know, I have, if you looked in my closet at the farm, it's primarily secondhand clothing.
So I'm so glad you brought up the farm because
so am I.
Because I think another interesting myth is that secondhand clothing or consignment is only the domain of luxury, that it's only a handbag or something that's extraordinarily expensive. But when you look at, and there is a very nice market around luxury goods, but the market around a J. Crew dress is even more gigantic. You know, the if you look at the average selling price of an apparel item in the U.S., it's much closer to $20 than it is to $2,000. It's probably 60, 70, 80% of the units are under $20. And the reason why I gave you such a wide range is I'm not sure the exact number, but it's big.
Yeah.
And so secondhand is really, if the quality is good and if we're doing all that work and photographing them, attributing and pricing it right, then you're opening up access to those units in a way that people feel good about. They're confident about the quality and they're confident they're gonna love what they take out of the box.
It's funny though, because you know, you're saying, oh, when I'm at the farm, I'm wearing secondhand things. But you know, ThredUp is making it a luxury experience almost. You know, I get that box and I open it up and it's wrapped in tissue paper and it looks like, oh, this is a beautiful package. And now I'm pulling out this really beautiful dress that I can wear to work, that I can wear to a fancy event. And so it's really helping, you know, rebrand that idea of secondhand. So you guys started online only, but now you do have physical stores, correct?
We do. We have 5 stores. Mm-hmm. They're all in California.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What was the spark for that?
So I think we wanted to test a few hypotheses we had. We wanted to test first that we could redefine what it meant to be a retail store. So in some respects, we think of our stores as almost like little service centers where you can get a ThredUp cleanout bag, where you can drop off a ThredUp cleanout bag, where you can see fresh inventory and shop over time, where you can return your items. It's also just an acknowledgement that, look, the vast majority of apparel is still bought offline.
Yeah.
And so we wanted to, you know, sort of look at and understand, where can we place these stores? What should the content in the stores be? What should you be able to do in a store that was really value add beyond the website? And I think what we're learning is that there really is value add there for the consumer. And we're even doing some pop-up stores in about 40 plus department stores throughout the US so that we could, you know, sort of test these behaviors. And we're learning a lot. I wouldn't say we've perfected it yet, but you know, we're in the business of perfecting things that are hard. But I think that the stores are super promising. And look, you just have to go to where the consumer is. And there are some consumers who are like, I love the idea of secondhand, but I want to go to a store.
Yeah. It's so interesting, though. You said pop-up stores and department stores. So yeah. You're bringing in, ThredUp is bringing in secondhand clothing into a department store that is selling firsthand clothing.
That's exactly
and
right.
How does the retailer feel about, I mean, how did you guys approach the retailer to start that partnership?
Well, so, yeah, you know, actually we were approached by the retailer and, you know, I think a lot of retailers, they have a different mindset today than they had 5 years ago, yeah. You know, with the pressure from Amazon and everything else, they very much have a growth mindset. So they're looking at the use of their square footage and they're saying, well, what's better? Should we put another clothing rack in that area or should we put a Starbucks?
Yeah.
Should we put an Amazon return bar in that area or should mm-hmm. we put another rack of dresses? So there's a lot of creative thinking amongst retailers and it's leading them to find, well, what are other sources of content mm-hmm. and amazing secondhand brands that maybe the store doesn't carry new could be really value add, especially if that content is clothing that attracts a younger customer. Mm-hmm. And especially if it's content and clothing that can be refreshed regularly. So they can come back and see maybe once every week or every 2 weeks, there's something new on those racks. There's a new rack of Madewell dresses or there's a new rack of, so that brings people into the store. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's where you're seeing some of the experimentation with us and some of our retail partners. And we want to do a lot more of it because the results are very strong in both increasing frequency to the stores and in basket sizes. So we think there's, you know, when you think about how the consumer shops, they don't necessarily want to go to five places to buy five different things. If going back to the original statistic, if the retailer had great secondhand brands in the store, they would buy more of it. It's a differentiated proprietary product. And they know that if that DVF wrap dress is on the rack in their local department store and it's secondhand, that's in their size, it's gonna be very hard for them to find that deal somewhere else. So it really is a highly, highly differentiated draw to bring foot traffic into the store.
You know, you indicated earlier that it's everybody. I mean, demographics really don't matter, but there's got to be a sweet spot for you guys. I mean, you know, as it relates to people, you're not having to train them or to educate them. They come in and they know. What is that? I mean, I'm thinking like, you know, everything sustainability and corporate social responsibility and all of these things that are important to millennials today, sustainability probably being one of the highest things, climate and everything else. But so that seems to be the easy one. Is that the sweet spot?
I think so. I mean, if you just look at the numbers about where the growth is, it's definitely amongst millennials and Gen Zers. There's just no question. So the numbers speak to it. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think this is a mobile generation, and it's a mobile generation that doesn't want to be seen wearing the same thing twice in their Instagram feed. But at the same time, they don't want to feel guilty about the impact they're having on their community and their environment. They're very conscious of the fact that, you know, the apparel industry is the most polluting industry just behind the petroleum industry. So if you start to look at those numbers of, you know, a garbage truck of unused textiles being incinerated every second, you start to say, there's got to be a better way. And so I think that generation is conscious of that. I like to quickly add, though, that they're not willing to pay more.
Yeah.
So this is where it gets
right.
This is where you really have to get entrepreneurial. They're not willing to pay more, but boy, they want you to do the right thing, and they will reward you for doing the right thing, especially if you keep showing them great deals. Yeah. So I think that's been a sweet spot. It'll continue to be a sweet spot.
I regret that we were running short on time. This has been incredibly interesting. It's a phenomenon, and I'm totally serious when I say it's just really hard to wrap your head around just the enormity, the logistics alone, everything that you have coming in, what you've got to do with it once it comes in, getting it online, getting it out, and you know, making a customer happy. That's amazing. And so
thank you.
It's a real testament to your success. So there is a part of our program you may know, you may not know.
Oh, I don't know. Uh-oh, here it comes. Here comes the lightning round.
Well, here it comes. You're exactly right. We call this rapid fire.
Okay. Oh, boy.
One of our favorite segments on Retail Gets Real is rapid fire. Thanks to our sponsor, PwC. So we're going to ask you some questions. They're not hard questions. And you're just going to tell us the first thing that comes to mind.
Great. I love it. Let's do it.
All right. Chris, start us off.
What was your first job?
My first job was working as a laborer for a construction company.
Pizza or hamburger?
Oh, pizza.
New Jersey.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't even know why.
That's right. I know. You could have skipped that one. You're like, yeah, we know that.
If you could instantly master one skill, what would it be?
Ooh, I love that one. Master one skill. I think patience. Yeah. You know, things are never as good as you think they are, and they're never as bad as you think they are. You just have to keep going. And whether that's at work or in your relationships or whatever it is, I think you just have to, you know, you have to stay optimistic and hopeful. And I think patience is at the root of all that.
That's perfect, actually. Early bird or night owl?
Oh, early bird for sure. Yeah.
What's the best book or article that you've read lately?
I've been catching up a lot lately on David Brooks. He just wrote a new book called The Second Mountain. You know, he's a New York Times op-ed columnist, and it's great weekend reading because he's at a very different altitude, and he wants you to, you know, live a more moral life. And so it's good to complement the part of your brain that's focused on being analytical and precise all week long with, you know, getting back to being a human being at least for 2 days of the week.
Yeah.
If there was a movie about your life, who would play you?
Oh, I'd love Tom Hanks to play me, of course. Who else would you pick but Tom Hanks? Or maybe Al Pacino. That would be great.
Yeah. I could see Al Pacino doing Anthony Marino.
Yeah, he could do it. Yeah. He wouldn't take the part, but he could do it.
You never know. Chris, wrap it up.
What makes you go on a rant?
Oh, what makes me go on a rant? So my kids are 9 and 12.
Okay.
They're, you know, so they can get me going on a good rant. You know, though, here's
just wait. That's the early stages.
I know. Everybody keeps telling me this is the easy part. You know, I think that chances are if I go on a rant, it's because I haven't been clear about my expectations and about what I know and don't know. You know, and I think as you get older, you realize you have to be very, very transparent about what you understand and don't understand. And then you don't have to rant. People will help you. And so I'm working on that.
Awesome. Anthony, if somebody wants to learn more about ThredUp, where do they go online?
Yeah, sure. They could visit ThredUp.com and check us out. My email's anthony@ThredUp.com. I don't mind getting emails. I email with our customers and all the time. And so feel free to reach out anytime. We always want feedback and hear for ways we can be better.
Anthony Marino, ThredUp, thank you for being our guest today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Chris, thank you for co-hosting.
Thanks, Bill.
Great job, as always. Now, you can find more information about today's discussion on our website, retailgetsreal.com. And please, give us your feedback and some episode ideas to podcast@nrf.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.